I'm pleased to say that today my guest is a former professional wrestler, music impresario, and nightclub owner, Mr. Bob Archer. Bob, nice to see you.
How do you do?
How you do? So, Bob, tell me, please, when and where were you born?
I was born in Chelmsford, Essex. All my family were around there.
And when was that?
I was born in 1937.
So you lived through the war. Do you have any memories of the war? Do you remember
I
the
do
Blitz?
indeed, yeah, because we all lived with my nan in her little three-bedroom house. That was my mother, my brother and I. My father was away in the army, and also my uncle, auntie, and then they had a daughter. So there was quite a lot of us in this small house. We kept chickens in the back garden because, and grew vegetables, and my uncle had an allotment because, things were difficult to come by. And my mother, she worked for the post office and drove a post office delivery van.
And do you remember the bombing at all?
Oh yes, in fact, my mother, when she was driving the post office van, doodlebug landed fairly adjacent, and it blew the van from one side of the road to the other.
But she survived.
Yeah, and of course, I say my father, I didn't really know him until the end of the war because he in Ireland, and then he went to India and Burma.
Yes.
So it was quite a shock when this very aggressive, fit guy arrived at the end of the war.
And he was a professional wrestler in his day, was he?
He was a professional wrestler, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, quite well known one, yeah.
So tell me a little bit about school. What was school like for you?
School was, went to a local junior school and then got through the 11 plus and went to the Mid-Essex Technical School. I used to cycle everywhere, so I used to cycle to school and then I did a paper round, which I also cycled.
Yeah. And what were you good at school?
I suppose the best subject that I got the highest mark of in our school in that particular year, I got 80%, was English.
So how did you get into wrestling?
I started wrestling when I was about 9 years old. There was a local club at the local police gym, and then someone came up to my father a while later and said, "Your boy's doing well with wrestling." And he said, "What wrestling?" He didn't know that I'd
Yeah.
been going to this club. I think I had my first professional match about when I was about 18, 19. Well, I was due for national service, but in the meantime, I'd applied for aircrew. Anyway, I did get through. I wanted really to become a pilot, but I did get through as an air signaller. But in fact, I had a motorbike accident. And anyway, the air signallers were going out. The new air electronics officers were coming in with the V bombers.
What
So
happened in the motorbike accident?
I hit Battlesbridge on the way to Southend. We were four of us on two motorbikes going to Southend on the bank holiday. Something happened to us, which I don't know what, because I woke up in Billericay Hospital.
With a fractured skull.
Yeah.
And then you were discharged from the Royal Air Force
From the Royal Air Force,
because of
that's
that
right.
injury.
Yeah.
And you became a wrestler.
Yes.
What year was that? How old were you then when you had the accident?
Must have been 18.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you did well in wrestling, didn't you? I believe you eventually you wrestled for the World Championship. Is that right?
Well, that was in Paris, yeah. I was flown over to Paris to wrestle with a guy called René Ventimore, who they claimed, the French claimed, was the world champion at my weight. We got interviewed on television, and I think the match was televised.
And how did you get on in that?
Well, he beat me.
Yes.
It was at the Palais des Sports in Paris, which is quite a big arena. Subsequently, I did a lot of work in France. It was the promoters over there got to know me.
And am I right that you retired from wrestling and then you made a comeback in your 40s?
That's right. Yeah.
And how long did that last?
Just 1 year.
And any other famous names you wrestled?
Well, there was, of course, there was Mick
Yeah,
McManus. He
you
was
wrestled
Jackie Pello.
there. Yes.
They were probably the two of the, when television came in, they were the two that became quite well known.
And your brother wrestled too, is that right? Did
Yeah, he wasn't really interested until I actually became a wrestling promoter. I left Joint Promotions, who were the big people that had the television promotions, etc. And I joined the opposition promoters. It was all over a union that we'd formed, and we were told that we had to be in no part of the
And you were a
union,
union
so
leader of some kind, were you?
and I'd been voted on the committee, so I wouldn't sign.
So they got rid of you.
Yeah, but I knew I was pretty safe because guys I was very friendly with, they
Yes.
had this rival group. It was then that I did a lot more work in France because their circuit wasn't as big. But they became my best friends and also my partners subsequently in the Cromwellian Club.
We'll come on to that. But tell me about your brother. Didn't I believe you were a very good tag team, is that right?
Well, that's right. So he, when I had this wrestling promotion, he worked as a second. And
Yes.
he began to get a bit interested then. I trained him up, and he became my tag team partner, the Anthony Brothers.
How far did you get as a tag team?
The big rivals were the Cortez Brothers, and we had some big matches with them. And eventually we took the title. So we became the tag team champions in our weight class.
Excellent. Well done. You and your brother Chris wrestled, but you wrestled under the name of the Anthony Brothers. Why weren't you called the Archers?
My father, he wrestled also, and he used to wrestle as Bob Archer O'Brien, and I didn't want to have the same name as him.
And if people search on YouTube for Bob Anthony wrestler, they'll find you wrestling Mick McManus and people, won't they?
That's right, yes.
So
So,
when did you start putting on music?
gosh, that was in the 60s. What I did, there was a local corn exchange in my hometown where they held the wrestling
In Chelmsford.
in Chelmsford, and it was also a skating rink, and I managed to hire it. I put on bands every Saturday night,
So
and
what sort of bands did you get?
everybody that was anybody in that era, the bands that really were popular there were more the rhythm and blues bands. I used The Who there a lot, and Georgia of Fame, Zoot Money. Somewhere here I've got a whole program of
So you were looking through some of the bands you booked for Chelmsford in 66 and 67. Tell us those some of those names that you picked out, please.
This was 1966, yes, September the 24th, Brian Auger Trinity with Julie Driscoll. October the 22nd, The Move. October 15th, The Who. November 26th, Cream. December 17th, The Alan Price Set. 67, January 21, The Small Faces. February 25th, Jimi Hendrix Experience. April 22, Bo Diddley. August 19, Eric Burdon and the Animals. September 23rd, Pink Floyd. December 16, Fleetwood Mac with Peter Green.
Fantastic list. And what sort of price was admission in those days to the club?
Well, it was 6 and 6 months before 8:30, and 7 and 6 months after 8:30.
Very good value. And did you met all those people there, did you?
Oh yes, and a lot of these bands also, or in fact most of them, also worked at the Cromwellian. Brian Auger and Julie Driscoll, frequently, very very good band. Jimi Hendrix, he used to come in and sit in very often, and so Eric Burdon, he was, and some of the other animals, they used to like to come and
So you
sit
booked them first in Chelmsford and then they came in subsequently to the Cromwellian.
or maybe they'd been to the Cromwellian before.
Tell me about the Who. What were they like? Well, tell me about
Who
them.
they were a bit crazy. I always remember one night when the Who were booked, and I had the place full, absolutely full up, and no band, no equipment. Eventually, the singer of the Who,
Roger
Roger
Daltrey.
Daltrey, he arrived. I was outside looking for them, hoping that they were going to arrive because I got the place absolutely full. And I said, "Come this way, Roger." Which I took him to a side door, which meant he had to walk over the stage to get to the dressing rooms around the back. And so, of course, all the kids saw him, and he said, where's the rest of the band?" I said, "You're the only one here, Roger." "Where's the equipment?" I said, "There hasn't been any equipment arrived." He said, "How can I get out?" I said, "You aren't going anywhere."
And what
Anyway,
happened?
eventually, everything arrived. They went on stage. I was positioned at the fairly near the front of the stage because there was a very low stage, and the kids were right near the stage. And Daltrey had a habit of putting his hand down,
The girls.
girls, and my dad, who didn't really understand all this, he was saying, "No, no, 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 be a good girl, no, you mustn't do that." And then of course Keith Moon started to kick his drum kit up in the air and
Yes,
everything.
he was a wild man, wasn't he?
That was all part of his thing, he would
Wrecked the place.
wreck the drum, so I managed to get across to my dad that it was all part, all part of the performance.
Very good. And you're telling me about a six-piece band or something you had there that you paid not very much to, and they had somebody who went on to become famous.
Oh, of course, Elton John.
Yes.
Yes. Elton at the Cromwellian, his
I see.
band, Bluesology,
Yeah.
they were my main band. And
how much did you pay them?
I think I paid them £30
a night.
Yeah.
You got Elton John.
Yeah, yeah.
So when did you acquire? When did you become come to manage the Cromwellian?
Well, that came about because a friend of ours, Tony Mitchell, who had a restaurant in Soho, but he was opening this club in Cromwell Road, South Kensington. We were all invited to the opening. We used to go there regularly, but realised that perhaps the clientele wasn't of the best. And at that time, of course, you had some teams of villains in London. You had the Crays, you had the Richardsons.
I believe the Crays were in the audience when you were wrestling. They watched you on several occasions, is that right?
They used to get to Wimbledon Palais. Yeah.
And you had some trouble with some of their gang, didn't you?
We did, yeah. There was the first night that we bought in with Tony, we just let it run so we could sort of have a look at who was who.
When was this? Mid-60s?
Early-60s. Anyway, there was quite a few people that we thought were a bit undesirable, including one chap who actually worked for the Crays, because they had a gambling club just down the road in Knightsbridge.
So what was his name?
Called Esmeralda's Barn. Yeah. And he was known as Curly King. Curly was there, and Paul Lincoln, who was the namesake of Paul Lincoln Managements, which was the wrestling group that I had been working for.
He was your partner, was he?
He was Australian, as was one of the other partners, Ray Hunter. So Paul said, I'll have a word with him. So he said, Curly? Curly said, yes, what is it, Paul? Because he knew Paul from Soho, yeah. And Paul had actually had to give him a kicking at one stage when he got out of hand. And Paul said, well, we've taken over here now, Curly. He said, and I'm afraid you won't be welcome anymore. Curly said, well, I'm the one what brings them all here. Curly was the first person we barred, but then the next night when we opened, we manned the door, and as the ones came to the door that we didn't want, we sort of blocked. But then, of course, we'd now lost our clientele, so yeah. We then had to build it up again, but that job was given to me, and I had got good knowledge of which bands were happening at the time, including Bluesology, which was Elton John's band.
So who else did you have there? I believe you met Jimi Hendrix, is that right?
Yes. What happened was, one of the Animals, Chas Chandler, who was the bass player in the Animals, he was the one who brought Jimmy over from New York. The first place they hit after from the airport was the
Cromwellian.
And Chas came to the door and with Jimmy and said, Bob, I'd like you to meet Jimmy. And I thought, my God, who's this sort of exotic-looking...
What was he wearing? What did he look like?
He had a velvet jacket on, I remember. And, it was all very, very show-busy. But anyway, that night, Brian and Oliver Trinity were playing. They were a very, very good band. And Jimmy got up on stage with the band, and he had his guitar, and he just blew everybody's mind. You know, it was quite incredible. I had a girl working for me as a disc jockey, Kathy Etherington, her name was, and because she met Jimmy that night, and she became his girlfriend, and she has written a book about Jimmy.
So, Bob, tell me about when the Bee Gees came to the club.
The Bee Gees, they came to the club, was asked